You're listening to The Natural World. I'm John Cooney. Journal entry, December 13th, 10:30 a.m. Mid Willamette Valley, E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area. The aftermath of week-long sub-freezing temperatures unveils a transformation in the appearance and texture of life on the valley floor. Evidence of devastation is all around. Plants and animals that had been barely surviving as the days grew shorter and temperatures more frigid have finally withered into quiet demise. The long freeze has silently ended the lives of countless organisms that grew vigorously and reproduced profusely during the warmer months. The luxuriant growth of summer is now both a vague memory and an optimistic promise. This sanguine potential is suspended, locked away in the form of seeds, tubers, bulbs, eggs, larvae, and pupae, buried underground, hidden beneath fallen leaves, wedged in cracks in tree bark, and sheltered in sprays of lichen. Our species' self-awareness leads us to view death as a tragic inevitability. Potential loss and the eventual termination of the self are never quite detached from our consciousness. But life itself would not be possible without death. The creative forces of evolution can only best express themselves in a vacuum. Each winter, these mass dyings reset the landscape, allowing newborn life to compete for newly opened terrain. But there are many that survive quite nicely through the cold months, taking advantage of winter's unique opportunities. While the surrounding hardwood forest is leafless and dormant, epiphytic mosses and lichens are bursting with life, benefiting from plentiful moisture and unshaded sunlight. Bird life is remarkably abundant. The leafless forest canopy makes observation much easier than in spring or summer. American robins are often overlooked by bird watchers because they are so common. But this abundance is an indication of how perfectly adapted these birds are to our climate. Robins forage on the ground during the warmer months in search of earthworms and beetles. During the winter, their diet is mostly fruit-based. Dozens of birds are sloppily feasting on freshly thawed volunteer apples. These apples, mixed amongst the native trees, are remnants of one of Oregon's most famous ghost towns. E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area occupies a site that was previously the small town of Wells. In 1942, the U.S. government appropriated the property for the purpose of training four divisions of soldiers for overseas duty in World War II. Camp Adair arose almost overnight in place of the small town. The camp itself covered an area 2 miles wide and 6 miles long with 1,800 buildings. It became the second largest city in Oregon at the time and housed roughly 40,000 troops. Today, all that remains are overgrown, moss-covered concrete foundations in an orderly plat of deteriorating asphalt avenues. In 1950, the Oregon Game Commission acquired use of the northern section of the old camp. For years, it was used to raise ring-necked pheasants and other exotic game birds as targets for hunters. When that program ended, restoration of seasonal wetlands became the new mission. Nearly 200 acres of wetlands have been restored or enhanced in the past 10 years. While most of the robins along the path are preoccupied with the overripe apples, others pluck and gobble down bright red rose hips that dangle from delicate branches scattered throughout the understory. Spotted towhees, Oregon juncos, and golden-crowned sparrows scratch their feet and use their bills to turn over leaves searching for seeds and insects. A bewick's wren explores the thick green moss at the base of a tree, while a downy woodpecker flicks away pieces of bark to get to hidden beetle larvae. Kinglets and chickadees surgically remove tiny insects and their eggs from lichen-covered branches with energetic precision. A red-tailed hawk leaves its high perch and flies across the frozen lake, rocking playfully from side to side before powerfully readjusting its course towards open ground. polish the lenses on your binoculars and mark some days late this month to watch the gray whale winter migration. It is short and quick, usually only about 4 weeks, from mid-December to mid-January. The whales are not slowed by having calves in the pod and single-mindedly move southwards in straight lines a few miles offshore. You can see their spouts, but they are distant. About 18,000 gray whales will pass by the Oregon coast. A gray whale's blow is up to 15 feet high, and each blow is visible for about 5 seconds. When warm, moist air exhaled from the animal's lungs meets the cool air at the ocean surface, it creates the bushy column visible from seaside cliffs. If you have sightings or events you would like to report or suggestions of areas you would like to see profiled, you can send me email at John Cooney, that's John with an H, C-O-O-N-E-Y, at msn.com.